This is Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Just pinballing around, Dave. Just pinballing around.
Oh, it's nice. You got some...
Look at this guy behind you. Look at who just walked into the studio here.
Oh, look at it. It's Paul Moyer.
He looks like a guy we just talked to earlier today on the phone.
In person.
We are on the air. Yeah. Come on in. Have a seat.
Yeah.
Have a seat.
Look at Paul's autographing book.
He's getting ready to read you a book is what he's doing there. What do you got going on there, Paul?
Push the red button over there. Yeah.
There you go.
Well, I'm killing time before the show, 7 o'clock, but so I'm going to go watch the game. It's a couple of charity. I think one of them is for Alonzo Mitts. And so Sandy Gregory is having us sign some of the balls.
Sandy Gregory's worked for the Seahawks for...
She's the best.
From the very beginning, I think. And now she's retired now, but she's doing some charity stuff for Kurt Warner. Yep. Kurt Warner, raising money for...
Is autism for his kids, but they have a thing going on, I believe, out in, I want to say, Enumclaw, where they've autistic kids. And so they're building a community there to help them with, potentially when the parents are gone, because autism is, with the parents, that's a lifelong, care for
commitment,
them.
Yep.
So it's really cool. They're trying to raise money for it. So great. Yeah. They're all great causes, but this one's a little closer to my heart.
Yeah.
Nice.
Well, when I came in the league, I thought you and Kurt Warner were a couple.
Hey.
I mean, you guys were always around each other, man. It was, I mean, you guys were as close as could be. And I remember...
Hello, everybody.
I was just going to say that. So remember Crow and West?
Yeah, I know that. I don't know that I ever actually listened to them, but I was aware of
them. They used to do Wayne Cody imitations all the time, and it was always the one thing that Kurt hung on to was, hello, everybody.
Hello, everybody.
And so Kurt, there's I think it's Paul's wedding, at the birth of his first child.
Taylor's,
all you can hear is
Taylor.
Kurt Warner in the background going, hello, everybody.
I have my daughter's born. He comes after practice to the hospital, and we're filming. He's got the video camera, and he's filming. He must have said hello, everybody, 100 times.
Kurt Warner did.
Yes, and clearly he thought it was funny.
Yeah,
it was funny the first 98 times, but the last two, I said, okay, no more.
He was cracking himself up.
Yes.
Yeah. So you brought that in to get Dave's autograph there?
Yep. We went from about, $2,000. We're down to about $150 with that signature.
It's getting less and less valuable.
Wow. So Moyer and I worked on this book, Then Zorn Said to Largent, and not sure they ever cleared that title with Steve Largent.
That's why they're so mad at us.
When did this come out?
I don't know. It wasn't our
ago,
was
12?
It our idea, Paul?
No. So Chris Clough, they were trying to do this in every city where there was an NFL franchise. Back then it was probably 30. And they said, the greatest stories ever told. And so he said, hey, why don't you do this with me? You've played, you've coached, you've been in broadcasting, you cover most of the era. And I said, well, I don't have that much time. I was traveling a ton back then. And I said, Dave's a great writer, and he's got great stories. We have a little bit of, different, take on things. Why don't we bring him in, too? I didn't realize I was going to have to split my stipend with Dave.
Oh, no. See, I haven't heard this story.
Oh, yeah. No, he said, well, okay, but, we're going to pay you X, and you're going to have to give him whatever number. I said, well, I'll give him half. I don't care. It was really fun. I mean, we met 3-4 times a week, and he would tape it. We'd go to 13 Coins a bunch, and we'd stay there till midnight and
hanging out, telling stories.
And it really did teach me to be a better communicator and writer, and how to tell a story in a short amount of time. And what I did,
that's why we have you on weekly, by the way.
Thank you. I did find that was the first time I really understood something taken out of context. And so what Cliff would do is he would take the recording and he would rewrite what we said. And there was one part in there where I called Dave Craig. I go, oh, he's such a, starts with a D. We'll leave it at that.
Yeah.
And I go, I didn't say that. And he goes, no, it's exactly what he said. No, what I meant was, oh, he's such a jerk, or, you know, he's such a
You meant it in a fun way.
You said it with a certain tone.
And so what Dave and I did the last month, I'm sorry I'm taking up all your airtime here, we ended up rewriting. And I said, no, that's not what I meant. You know, so I had to go and Dave, and I would say, Dave, is that grammatically correct? And he goes, don't worry about it. They'll fix that.
Don't worry about it.
Don't worry about that. But don't worry about punctuation, whatever you say, don't say, don't spell it D-I-N for different.
Paul, we have a whole vocabulary for you, by the way.
It's changed. You know, whenever I say different now, I go different. Because I usually say different. I said, leave the "er" out.
You know, like, got a whole glossary for you.
You're a member. Remember that, Dave?
Yeah, that's he says.
He leaves out the
that.
"re." Yeah, we all have our quirks.
Oh, yeah. You know? Some of us have more than others.
Exactly.
Dave's got a little chart next to him when we talk to you.
Yes.
No, we appreciate
Dave
you coming.
Dave has lots of what we call bathroom stories.
Yeah.
Which we would love for him to
make. Oh, I could write a whole book on that. Yeah,
you should.
Sure.
Yeah.
I tell you about last year during COVID, and I was down three masks.
Nope.
Yeah. Long story short, I'm missing three masks.
There was no paper products in the car.
Honey, I'm not going to make it.
Yeah. I'm not going to make it. I've lost a couple of really good belts.
And some socks.
I did call Dave probably a month ago. I'm driving home from 520. I said, Dave, I have a story for you. I don't think I'm going to make it home. I said, I'm going to have to get hosed off before I get home because it's going to be all over me.
Dave's going,
Paul,
I can relate.
Paul, save it for the book. Save it for the book.
Save it for the year.
Yeah.
All right, that's all I got for you.
Well, it's good to see you, man.
Thanks for coming by. And 7 o'clock, you're going to be on with Bump.
Yep, and Cody Barton, you got to listen to it. I went and researched some things. There are some amazing stories about him and his family.
Oh,
unbelievable.
Nice.
One of the great athletic families of all time. His mom, she's an All-American volleyball and basketball. His dad played quarterback and was drafted. He's a pitcher also for Utah. His brother is playing for the Giants. His sister just finished her senior year as a volleyball player, and then they got a younger one coming up. I'm going to ask him, how good is he?
Is he a guy, and Dave always says this, he could be starting elsewhere. You know, you got Bobby and Jordan Brooks here, so that is a roadblock. But is he a guy you look at the same way and say, he's a starter in this league?
I think so. You know, again, I've always said I don't have enough data yet, and now I'm getting more through preseason. The one thing I did find interesting is every coach, high school, is it Whittingham over at Utah?
Mm-hmm.
Man, he thinks Cody's like one of the great of all time. And he said it's not, you know, maybe as a 4.240 type guy. It's his demeanor. He goes, this guy is tougher than nails. And his dad talked about how different him and his brother are. And so it'll be good. I'll asking him a few of those things.
Yeah, good deal. Good player.
And I'm going to ask him where you should take him out for dinner for your date.
All right. Yeah, I'm fine with that. Cody and I are cool. I told him all about it. I was like, just so you know, in case you think it's creepy, I didn't say the things that the texters are saying. But all right, Hawks live at 7 o'clock.
7 o'clock. He does like to hunt and fish, so maybe you guys just have a little cookout together.
Hunting and fish. We can go camping.
Great.
Glamping.
See you, Paul. There you go.
Thanks, Paul.
There's Paul Moyer. He's with us every week and out there doing some charitable work. He'll be on at 7 o'clock tonight with Bump, and they'll be talking to Cody Barton.
Yeah.
So that'll be a good conversation. Cody, he does have an intensity. He's got an intensity the way that he speaks. Not like an angry intensity, but just kind of he's got kind of almost a manic energy to him when he talks.
Yeah, he does. And you know, and I think he plays really well at middle linebacker. You know, so if anything ever happens, he's the guy that if you look on the depth chart that is the backup for every position. Pretty much. So, I mean, you're putting him in there as much as Nick Ballore. I mean, he played great. He really did. I like the thing about Nick, I guess he was telling, he was saying that he's not going to tell any of the young guys that he ever played linebacker before. So they just think that he was really, really cool.
He's just natural.
Natural.
Wow, this guy just picked it right up.
Yeah, but in fact, he actually played his first, 5 years in the NFL as a linebacker.
He converted to fullback.
Right.
So he was originally a linebacker. So that's why it's so natural. I think people are trying to get a rise out of you. 253. Barton is a special teams lifer. We've all seen him play.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. You don't know what you're looking at. I don't mean to get mad at you. It's fine. I'm sorry. I don't mean to snap, but I mean, yeah, that's not it, man.
But you meant what you said. You don't know what you're looking at.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah.
I did mean that.
Yeah.
So I would love to sit down. Like when some people say, you know, somebody said, did you get a signed jock strap from Dave?
For Dave.
Oh, okay. Oh, that was from Cody.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, I could give you 50 reasons why, if you look at the way he plays and how downhill he is and his speed, and especially, well, actually, go look this up. Football 101, which I'm going to start doing again next week. I think it was 2019 at Carolina. He had, you know, and I diagrammed two plays where he could have had two interceptions in that game. And it's because of his savvy and his pass-dropping ability. Kind of take you through the cover two thing and, you know, where he's supposed to drop and everything. And so he's really good that way. But I could show you running plays as well. Go watch the Minnesota game from last year. Watch him attack the line of scrimmage. Watch him take on fullbacks. He's physical. Plus, he can drop back and play zone. Anybody can play man-to-man because guess what? You cover that guy, right? Now, there's some little techniques at the end of where you put your arm and, you know, how you twist your hips. But try playing zone where you're trying to understand what the offense is trying to do to you. You know, you can't turn around and look. You're looking at the quarterback. You're trying to guess based on what's happening underneath, what's going on behind you. And he does that. So, I mean, he's checked every box.
509, if Barton was so good, why did we draft Brooks?
I don't know. Well, you know, my point is he should be on the field.
Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, I'm not sure. I don't know why they drafted Brooks at the time because, you know, I thought.
Well, that surprised all of us.
Yeah. I mean, I remember thinking it's a fair question, but, you know, I just think they thought he was the best player at that point.
You know what's going to happen, Dave? Is he's going to get put into a game in a crucial moment. And he's going to make a big play somewhere, maybe a game-saving play. And you're going to be thinking about what Jerry DePoto could have done when Toro hit that grand slam where he just walked out into the middle of the stadium and told everybody they were number one. I picture you doing that. I picture you coming in here the next day and in front of those cameras saying, all you Cody doubters, all you people that gave me a hard time about praising Cody, you're number one. I think that's going to be your moment.
Yeah, no, probably not. But yeah, so a lot of people saying, why did they draft they said Taylor. Well, Taylor
was a defensive end.
He was a defensive end.
They're converting him to linebacker to keep him on the field a la Bruce Irvin, right?
Right. Yeah, and then, you know, they just found out that he's one of those guys they have to get on the field. They have to get him on the field. They need to find a way. And the comparison was that I was told was, remember when Bruce Irvin was, they moved him to linebacker.
Mm-hmm.
It's because they had Cliff Averill out there and they had, you know, other pass rushers that were good and, you know, they wanted to get him on the field. So they put him out there as a linebacker, which he hated.
But yeah.
He got two pick sixes in 2014.
But he wants the sack.
He wants the sacks. Yeah. So yeah, that's a good comparison there, but yeah, I don't know what's going to happen with Cody Barton. I mean, you know, my fear is that they either trade him or something and then he goes somewhere else and balls out. But, you know, I feel kind
of... Another opportunity for you to tell everybody.
Yeah.
They're number one.
No, I just... I'd hate to see that. I'd hate to see that happen. So, but, you know, the one thing, I was impressed by him because they asked, hey, you were expecting to start by year three, right? And he's like, yeah, I was, but I don't think about those things. I don't think about it that way. I just look at what's in front of me and take it, you know, day by day. So... You know, and the other thing I worry about for him is that maybe he gets an injury or something and then that slows him down. Because I've always said this, you know, the 2 years in 88 and 89, it was so crucial. With all the injuries that I had, that I started 33 games in a row because there was a playoff game in there.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, if that had happened my first, you know, if that hadn't happened until later, I mean, I might not have ever gotten there. If I'd had the season I had in 87, 91, 90, where I missed like half the games, my career might never have gotten going.
This is a question I often ask. 360, Dave, do people not realize that it's better for the team if you're right about Cody Barton?
Yeah.
There's a certain amount of glee and joy in Mariner fans, Seahawks fans. Doesn't really matter the team we're talking about. If they identify a player as being less than, this guy stinks. You think he's great. I'm telling you right now he stinks. So they root for that. He's on their favorite team.
Yeah.
But they're really rooting for him to fail. So they could go, see, you were wrong, and I was right, and he hurt my team, and I root for my team, but I'm happier about being right that he stinks.
Yeah,
it doesn't make any sense to me at all. I don't get the joy that comes along with being right about somebody stinking. That plays for your favorite team. That just is. Those are the, when we talk about it, like we're talking the Seahawks schedule, and I'm going, well, I think the Seahawks are going to have a tough time. I don't see them winning this game.
Right.
I'm always throwing out there, man, I want to be wrong. I'll wear it. I'll come in and go, man, I was wrong. They won, and I am happy to be wrong.
Yeah.
There are those that really want to be right about something awful on their favorite team. It's a really weird conflict.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. Well, I mean, everybody loves, and this is the beauty of sports radio. You know, we get texters and everything, and people love to say, oh, I told you this happened. And I'm like, okay, you're right, it did. Guy got hurt, this, that. But, you know, it's just people love being right. And it's like, even if you are right, you know, once out of 10.
At the expense of your favorite team.
But that, yeah, it's a great point you make.
I don't get that. Yeah. I don't.
In order for you to win your petty argument, the team has to fail.
Yeah, your favorite team has to take a face plant on some level, or this player has to cost the team. It just, I don't get it. But okay, all right, we'll see what happens with him. Hopefully, he doesn't go elsewhere and crush, and then we're all going, well, great.
Can I just make my blanket statement though? Because people, yeah. Barton is awesome on special teams. Not a starter though. According to who?
The 253.
Okay. That's all I want. All right.
Their assessment after looking at the all 22, Dave, and sitting in the film room with the coaching staff, they've come to the conclusion he's not a starter.
Yeah.
He's a special teamer, though. He's pretty good there.
Well, I'll tell you, Moyer, you know, he fancies himself as a linebacker coach. Now, Paul is very in tune with linebacker play. And actually, he coached linebackers over at Bellevue. And, you know, he used to coach me. Paul, when he got hurt, I remember him coming in and talking to me a couple of times about things. I mean, I'm pretty sure he shares that same view. So I'm like, don't just take it from me. And also, you know, there's always arguments amongst coaches and scouts and the GM and all that of who should be on the field.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there are some people over there that feel like Cody Barton should have been on the field last year. And people are like, well where do you put him? I'm like, well, I don't know, but
It's an interesting quandary they've got going there. Is there any concern for you as a fan of this team in this game? I mean, it's game one. I don't have a big concern other than it's just the unknown. I guess I'm fearing the unknown with this team on some level. I have no idea what the offense is going to look like because we didn't really see much of anything in the preseason. We didn't see Russell at all. We didn't see Carson at all. We didn't see DK and Lockett and Dwayne Brown. We didn't see Everett. We didn't see any of it. So I still have zero idea what to expect, and we keep deferring to what the Rams look like and assuming that's going to be what Waldron does, and maybe it'll be exactly the same. But it's more curiosity about, is that what it's going to look like? Are they going to be in rhythm? Is it going to be a slow build? It's going to be some growing pains in the first couple weeks, and then they're going to find it. Where are you at with week one?
Yeah, I guess it's one of those that it's kind of funny how, and we'll talk tomorrow, like how we feel because we make our predictions. And as the week goes on, sort of the feeling you get based on the news that's coming out of there. And then, you know, you just start to see this more in a game situation. And look, I'm looking at their defense and, you know, they drafted Kwity Paye, the kid out of Michigan, who has a great story, by the way. But you have to check that out. But he was drafted in the first round. On the other side, they got two DeForest Buckner down inside, who's playing, I guess, like in the three technique. And then Jake Heaps was talking today about Grover Stewart, who is a good, tough guy down inside. They got Darius Leonard. I just don't see our offensive line not blocking those guys so that Russ can, you know, you've got DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett and Will Disley and Gerald Everett, and I feel like you have all the weapons. So, but it is a big mystery because we didn't see any of them except at practice.
Yeah.
And there's a couple of times. And then at that mock game, you did see a little bit of that. So, you know, to me, it's more than anything. It's on the defense. I feel like that they should be good enough with the guys that they have down the middle of the field that, you know, and that goes, you know, Puna Ford, maybe, you know, whether it's Al Woods or, you know, and then you've got, you know, Bobby and Brooks, and then you got your two safeties. I just feel like you should be able to take care of this offense without T.Y. Hilton and with Carson Wentz coming in with his 5 to 12 week foot injury or whatever it is, his COVID situation, all of that stuff. I know that Quentin Nelson, also their guard. You know, it bothers me that Mark Glowinski's on their team because I like Mark Glowinski when he's here. And that was maybe one that you look at and go, oh, shoot, it's too bad they cut him. But Quentin Nelson, you know, he's had some problems with injuries and stuff. And, you know, I think he's probably going to play, but I just, I don't, I'm looking at this roster, and
they shouldn't beat them.
I feel like they should win this game.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't need to wait till tomorrow. I'm picking the Seahawks to win this, and it doesn't mean I'm thinking they're going undefeated this year, because they will not. There will be games I will predict they'll lose, and
yeah.
I hope to be wrong on those, Dave.
Sure.
I hope to be wrong. Every game I predict them to lose, I want to come in on Monday and go, I was wrong.
Yeah.
Mess that up. Boy, they won. That was great. That was great.
Look, I mean, you've got some tough ones coming up. I just don't think this is one of them. They've conquered the 10 a.m. start thing, which, by the way, they only have to do twice this year. The other one is Houston. So, you know, and they really didn't have any problem with that. I think I read somewhere.
They haven't had any trouble with that for years.
It's like since 2018, I think they've won 11 out of 13 is the number. Let me verify that, because I got my media book here. But, yeah, I mean, that hasn't been a problem for a long time. 11 of the last 12 early kickoffs since 2018. So there's that. You know, and again, you look at the rest of their, like you were saying, maybe at Minnesota ends up being a tough game. You know, maybe at San Francisco, I think for sure will be. You got Los Angeles coming in here, and you got Pittsburgh. So, I mean, there's a three-game stretch, you know, coming up here at the beginning of October that
it'd be tough to run the table on those three.
Yeah. San Francisco, L.A. at home, and at Pittsburgh.
Yeah. We'll go through those. I just don't think this weekend is where it falls apart, but we're also going in blind. The first week is the toughest, because you don't have anything to lean on. Like, hey man, you saw what they did last week with this position, or you saw how they ran the ball last week, or how we don't have any of that to fall back on. So we're all going in blind, just going, well, I'm just looking at names on the roster and going, this guy's really good versus their guy over there. I think they've got the advantage, so I'm picking them to win here.
It could be like last year against Atlanta. We had no clue then.
Yeah.
And they go into Atlanta and just lit it up.
Yep. So hopefully we're looking at something like that. All right, a reminder, don't forget Mike Salk is back in the mornings each weekday from 6 to 10 a.m., including the Jerry DePoto Show every Thursday at 8:30 a.m. Coming up, is it getting more expensive to keep Kyle Seager? Tell you what we're talking about next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Got football officially happening as we speak, Dave. It's officially happening. The Cowboys and the Buccaneers doing battle right now. No score in the first quarter of that one. Cannot wait for Sunday when the Seahawks take to the field out there in Indianapolis to take on Carson Wentz and the Colts. But meanwhile, we are on the edge of our seats with this Mariners team, who have the night off. That's a bummer. They'll get back to it tomorrow. They'll start a series with the Arizona Diamondbacks, and then it'll be, is it Boston right after that, I think? Boston's right after that. So, yeah, interesting six-game homestand coming their way. But a lot of the conversation as the season winds down centers around their third baseman and Kyle Seager, who's having a career year in home runs and will exceed his RBI production for a career high in that as well by the time the season's done. And Ken Rosenthal reported today in The Athletic that Kyle Seager's $15 million club option for next year has now increased to $19 million due to him reaching performance incentives. So he's hit some of those magic numbers that trigger that pay. Then there's also now a buyout due to the performance incentives reached. So it'll cost the Mariners $1.5 million, even if they let him go.
Wow.
How about that?
And I'm thinking the 94 RBIs and 34 home runs are what triggered the
bonuses. I'm assuming, yeah, without knowing the particulars of the deal. I mean, it's certainly not average, because it's that's not there. But he's production-wise has been better than he's ever been.
Well, it's amazing. I mean, it's an interesting story with him. Just because he's been here so long, he'll probably go down. I mean, who's a better third baseman
Nobody.
Than him?
People want to argue about Beltre maybe being a better defensive third baseman, but we're talking in the history of this organization.
Yeah, Beltre, but for how long?
I think he was here four seasons, maybe five seasons, but he was offensively a massive disappointment, considering I think he hit, 49 home runs or 50 home runs the year before he came here with the Dodgers. So I don't put Beltre there. He just, you're talking all-time Mariners, and they were showing some of his stats yesterday. He's like top five in just about every category, offensive category for this team. It's always like Edgar and Junior, Edgar Junior, Buehner, Edgar Junior, and Seager's right in there. He's like fourth, he's fifth, he's third. He's, you know, whether you're talking hits or doubles or runs scored or what have you. I mean, he's going to go down as one of the all-time great Mariners in the history of this organization. And he's a guy that if I were making the call, I'm picking up the option. You don't have a guy who's pushing him like, hey, we got to get this kid on the field. You got a third baseman who's ready to go. He just needs the experience. You don't have it. That guy, unless you're looking at Toro as your third baseman and, hey, we're just using him at second base this year, and then when Seager goes, we'll put him at third. All right, maybe that's their option. But if you're looking at the farm system, if you're looking at, you know, where we look at the outfielders, you got Julio Rodriguez, you got Kelnick, you got all this youth that's ready to go, you don't have that at third base. So in baseball dollars, this is not an exorbitant contract for what he's giving you.
Yeah, I agree. And then you look at, like, the number of games that he's played. I mean, his first season, this is 11 years for him now, 53 games. But then after that, 155, 160, 160, 161. I mean, and, you know, last year it was 59 out of 60 mm-hmm. that he played. I mean, just as solid as can be. And, you know, you look at the batting average, just not there. But does he want to be here?
Well, that's some of the debate. And I know our guy Ryan Divish wrote a piece for the Seattle Times today. And, you know, saying Kyle Seager's future with the Mariners is in flux as he awaits the team's decision to exercise his club option for 2022. And then he reposted it and said, this is Ryan Divish's take, said, similar to most stadium marriage proposals, there will likely be a parting of the ways, and really it might be best for both sides involved. That's Ryan Divish's take on this. Yeah, listen, we hear things behind the scenes, and there may be, you know, things about the front office that he and the front office don't agree on, and maybe some of that had to do with Mather, so you don't know if that's been relieved, some of those tensions, or if it still exists. But that's kind of been the belief, that there's kind of a mutual feeling of, you know, when it's done, it's going to be done.
Hmm.
I don't know if that's still true. Maybe with Mather not being there, maybe that changes a bit, but Ryan Divish is much closer to the situation than we are currently, and he's saying he thinks there's going to be a parting of the ways.
Yeah. I wonder if Kyle wants to go closer back home, or I know he's from North Carolina. So, yeah, it's kind of interesting, because I think that's one of those things everybody always talks about, and Blowers tells us every week, probably, and well, anytime that we ask him about Kyle Seager, that you're going to miss him when he's gone.
Oh, yeah.
Incredible defense, the RBIs, the home runs, and not a great average, but still just as solid as can be. You don't worry about it. He made an error the other day. Gosh, it was maybe in the last three or four games where I was like, huh, that's weird. It's like watching Dwayne Brown get beat for a sack. You just go, yeah, that never happens. So, yeah, it's a very reliable guy. I wonder, you know, it's going to be interesting to see if they do move on. Who's going to be your third baseman?
Yeah, I mean, we talked to, I think it was Ryan Roland Smith, maybe, who said, yeah, I could see them maybe putting Ty France at second base, and Evan White hopefully will step up and be the player you thought he was going to be when you made the investment that they did in him, and be your first baseman of the future. You have to have Ty France out there every day. So you if it's not at first base, maybe he's played third. Is he the option at third? If this is assuming Evan White steps up at the plate defensively. He was everything you heard he was and more. Offensively, he was minor league. That has to change. But assuming it does, okay, that's your first baseman. Ty France, you have to have him. Maybe he becomes the third baseman.
Yeah. Do you want to move Ty France right now?
Not really, but if he can play another position really well, maybe he won't be as good as Seager if he plays third, but he does have experience there. I haven't really watched him play third.
I asked Blowers this, because remember we were talking about Ty France, and he said sometimes your batting average, and if you're really doing well at the plate, it'll give your confidence defense,
right,
on defense. Other way around?
If he's playing really
if
well
you're playing
defensively?
Really, because that's Evan White. I mean, and to me, that's a bigger challenge. Like, yeah, getting Ty France to play better on defense, you feel like, okay, that's not something that, you know, is impossible. And I'm not saying it's impossible with Evan White. Obviously, they saw something in him, but it sure hasn't been good, you know. And so that seems like a taller task to accomplish.
Yeah, it's hard to tell with using Evan White as the gauge, because he's a rookie. That was his first taste of the big leagues and really, you know, his first exposure. So it's different with somebody with more experience asking, can they make that transition? Can they take their defense where they're excelling, and does it transfer to the plate? You know, you're seeing that with J.P. Crawford, maybe, a guy who's turned into a gold glove shortstop, one of the best shortstops in the game, when the knock on him coming in was, hey, we don't know if he's got a major league glove. His bat will play. We don't know about the glove, and it's now been reversed. Hey, can this guy hit well enough to maintain that spot as your leadoff hitter, can he maintain his offense? Because his defense is spectacular. So we'll see. I guess the good thing is they've got options. If they want to, you know, Toro seems like he's a guy that could play third. Obviously, France has played third. You could try him there. You've got options. But, you know, to me, the best option is to bring him back. But I just don't get the sense that that's reality, which is a bummer.
Yeah.
And I agree with Blauer's 1,000%. You're going to miss him when he's gone.
Yep.
Even the people saying, nah, not great. He doesn't do this. He doesn't do that. You'll miss him. You'll miss him. All right, coming up, are there new leaders on this Seahawks defense? We'll talk about that next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
What kind of commercial was that?
You like that?
I actually do. It was a funny Subway commercial with Tom Brady in black and white. He's wearing a nice suit, and it looks like it's going to be like for cologne or something.
Right.
And it's he's smelling bread from Subway, and then looks at the camera with his blue steel look. That was pretty good. That was pretty funny.
Has anybody ever noticed? All his looks are the same.
So good. All right. As far as the leaders on this defense, it seems like it's always been Bobby and KJ. They've been the guys, right? KJ is no longer there. Bobby obviously is still there. You think is it shifting at all? Could you see Jamal Adams stepping into a leadership role, or you've been in the middle of this, is it about tenure? Is it about a guy who's just been there for a long time? Or is it about a guy who makes the kind of plays that Jamal does and he's a very animated guy? Could he be a leader, or is that something he's going to have to grow into over time and be with this organization for a while?
I think, to me, and look, this isn't anything against Bobby. Bobby's just not one of those guys that's going to yell and scream and constantly, but Jamal Adams, you've seen him on those mic'd up segments. He never stops.
Watch him at practice. He's like that.
Yeah, always yelling and screaming. And remember, he was just so thrilled when DJ Reed got that pick in Washington. Yeah. He's like, DJ, running over there constantly, jumping up and down. I mean, that was the game where he had the sack, where he came from the other hash mark. It was the other number. All the way across the field. Not only was he 12 yards deep, he ran all the way across the field. So, to me, it lies within that safety group. So him, Quandre Diggs, I think has a pretty loud voice in that defense. But Marquise Blair might be the sleeper, the guy as far as the new type of leader on this team, because
he doesn't say much either, though, does he?
No, he doesn't. But like, it speaks on the field. So he had a hit, and I love this. Is one of my favorite plays from last year against Atlanta. He laid somebody out in the middle of the field. Quandre Diggs came running up behind him and, like, pushed him like, look at you, man. And he turned around like he was going to fire on him. Marquise Blair is, like, he's angry and he's nasty. And I like when we interviewed him, I thought he was a pretty good interview. I thought he was going to be really quiet.
I don't know that I had ever heard his voice before that.
I had not.
Know what he sounded like.
Yeah. So, but I liked what he said about, you know, he got kicked out of three games at Utah, and he said he's not going to change anything about the way he does it, goes about his business. I think, you know, look, you can't – it's just by happenstance that you hit helmet to helmet. I mean, a lot of times you're trying to hit something else. And by the way, if I'm a receiver, I would much rather be hit in the head than the knees. And that's something that Tom Brady was talking about on one of those Twitter things that I sent you guys, where he was talking about, you know, how offenses are – you know, quarterbacks are leading receivers.
Yeah, he was defending defenders.
Right. He's saying it's making it on them when it's really on us. We need to not throw the ball into an area where the receiver is going to get killed. It's called a hospital ball, Bob. We used to call it that back in the day. Why are you throwing hospital balls? So, yeah, the quarterbacks are in it, but it's, oh, no, we'll just punish the defense. And
Moyer was making the case that the penalties, the flag should be thrown on the quarterback.
On the quarterback,
which I'm going to go ahead and say, not going to happen.
Yeah.
But interesting idea.
Well, and that's exactly what Brady was supporting.
Yeah.
So, you know, anyway, getting back to Marquise Blair, just because, you know, he's one of those guys that he may get kicked out of a game at some point. And, you know, he talked about it now. He's not going to let it change the way he plays. But they need that kind of guy on their team. They need a hammer. They need somebody that is going to, you know, so that if anybody is, you know, trying to go around blocks or not playing physical or whatever, you've got guys there that are going to hold them accountable. And no matter what age group they're in. So that I think is going to be, I would say, you know, maybe Marquise Blair, the biggest sleeper there.
Would he be, and this is not saying he's the same player, but sort of like Cam, in that Cam was not a vocal guy.
No.
But he was that, here's how I handle my business guy. And it immediately he was drawing respect from that entire locker room and the league as people saw how he played.
Yeah.
But he wasn't Jamal Adams. He wasn't animated by any stretch.
No. But you know what's funny? I'm getting to know Cam, and he's such – I'm not really know him, but having met him a few times and stuff. He's such a nice, sweetheart of a guy. But back then, we didn't really know it. Because I was going to say, Marquise Blair seems like he has a little more of an edge, but Cam did too. You know, and I'm sure Marquise Blair has a side to him, you know, when he's with his mom and dad and stuff like that. But, I mean, I feel like he could be that guy that really steps up and – kind of sets the tone, you know, and that's what you need is a tone setter. I mean, that's somebody that, like, this is how we're going to play on this defense. And, you know, if you know, I was talking about this on the huddle that in 92, when we were so terrible, 2-14, the one thing I took a lot of pride in and everybody did on defense is that other teams would come across the field and go, you guys are balling out on defense. You guys are really good. You're tough. Everybody, we know how tough it is to go up against you guys, and, you know, there was just a sense of pride.
Yeah, that you were being recognized by your peers.
Yeah, and that, you know, okay, we're probably going to lose the game, but your defense is going to hit you.
They're going, we know you're not the reason your team stinks.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I always said that about the 92 seed. I want to make sure everybody knew that it wasn't my fault.
Yeah.
So
that was CYA out there, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
But as far, just quickly, just back to the leadership thing, could you see – Jamal, is it about time spent there, or could he assume a leadership role?
Yeah, I mean, he definitely can be a leader this year. There's no question about it. The guy's a Pro Bowler and everything. But, you know, you can have more than one leader on the defense, yeah. You know, you can have one guy in the defensive backfield. Because, you know, a lot of times linebackers and DBs are in one room, then the linebackers are with the defensive line. And, you know, there's enough room.
It was Sherm. It was Bobby. Maybe it was Cam on some level, just in terms of the regard they had for him. Earl was a vocal guy. So you're right. You did have multiple people within that defense that you could look at. Right. Yeah, he's a leader. He's a leader.
Right.
It wasn't that one singular voice, I guess.
Exactly. And like this one, you got Carlos Dunlap,
mm-hmm.
great leader. You got Bobby, of course. You know, maybe Brooks is a few years away. He says he likes to just observe and not ask too many questions. He's kind of a quieter guy. And he'll grow into that. But then, you know, and honestly, I wasn't – I led by example, but like when I was in college, there was very few times where I got up and said something to anyone in a meeting or anything like that. So you just go out and play by example. But I think Jamal Adams, he's got so much juice, man. It's just, he's always fired up. I don't see how he can't be.
Yeah. It's infectious. Just watching him. I just get amped talking to him. He's got that energy when you talk to him. He's got that intensity and passion, and you see him in practice, even when he was holding in, and he's cheering, and he's out there hooping and hollering, and it was just, yeah, he's a fun guy to watch, man.
And he waved to everybody.
He waved to everybody.
Including us.
Yeah, he's very cordial, very nice, very nice. All right, we're going to come back. We'll talk some more football. The professor, John Clayton, will join us next. It's Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.